And just like our number this evening, our reading is somewhat short. We're in the book of Psalms, if you'll turn there with me, to the 42nd Psalm. And we read just the first two of the verses of this psalm. Psalm 42, beginning at verse number 1. As the deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? The Bible, in both Testaments, does its inspired best to wake us up as mortals to the fact of our own immortality. The absolute fact that this life is not all there is. And God understands the problems we have baked into the system, as it were, because we're in a physical world. Our bodies are physical things. We deal with physical matters day by day, and it's hard to reach beyond the realm of what the senses can detect and focus on that. But the Bible says we have to. The Bible says we absolutely must do that. But at the same time, God knows that we have this difficulty with our focus. And that's why time and time again in both Testaments, we read passages which remind us, sometimes, as it were, shake us by the shoulders, urging us not to forget, to remember that this world is not all there is, that things we see are but an illusion of what is really real, that we instead should long for things past just the ordinary things of life. And so Jesus will encourage us to hunger and thirst after righteousness in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6, an idea which follows on the heels of what we just read a moment ago. A deer pants for the water brooks. We hunger and thirst for righteousness. Well, Jesus put it a different way in the 6th chapter of that same book of Matthew when he says to put your treasures, the treasure, as it were, your treasures, as Wycliffe put it, upon things above, not on things in the earth. And why? Well, things of this earth are where moth and rust corrupt them. Thieves can break through and steal them, but our treasures in heaven? Jesus said moth and rust can't corrupt these. Thieves can never break through and steal these treasures in heaven. And so set your affection there, which is the language that Paul uses in Colossians chapter 3. If you then have been raised with Christ, of course raised from the waters of baptism as new creation, you have been raised with Christ, set your affection on things above, not on things below, things of this earth. And why? Because your life is hid with Christ in God. He says you're dead. Physically dead, spiritually alive. And also Paul will say in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 that we should realize that even though the earth of man of this tabernacle is being dissolved day by day, we have a building of God not made with hands. And he prefaces that first part of chapter 5 by saying in chapter 4 that we look not at things which are seen. Odd language to use, but true. We look not at things which are seen, but at things which are not seen, because the things which are seen are temporal. They're temporary, here for just a while. Moth and rust corrupt them. Thieves break through and steal them. Instead, we lift our eyes to things we cannot see. Time and time again, the Bible urges us forward to thinking about something outside of life, beyond just the humdrum daily lives we all are living, to think spiritually. And we talk about this a lot. We hear about it in the songs we sing, in lessons like this one. And sometimes we have to ask ourselves the question, what does that even mean in real life? Because after all, I have to live a real life. I've got obligations before me. I have bills on my table. I've got schedules to keep. I've got people to meet with. I've got doctors to talk with. I've got medicines to take. I've got exercises to do. All of those things are just part of life, not to mention the people I've got to deal with day in and day out, some of which I enjoy being with, others a little less so. What do you mean to have a spiritual mindset? Well, a lot of it goes to what we just read a moment ago. If you've got a true hunger and thirst for the things of God, all of this works its way into the very fabric of everyday life, into the everyday doings and goings and comings of what we do hour by hour. It's not so much that we stop living our lives and start focusing on God. It's that our focus on spiritual things takes over and embeds itself in and completely is saturated in all the rest of the life we live every day. And I think there's the first mistake we make in trying in some way to separate the physical from the spiritual, as if they're two so separate things that we leave the one and start the other one. And sometimes we don't help the matter by doing this next, and I say this not wanting to mislead any of us. I realize there's a difference in our coming together, worshiping together, and our work for the Lord every day. And so we're right to say we've come together for the purpose of worship. I say that most every Sunday morning before the sermon starts. We've come together for the purpose of worship. That is never to suggest the fact, though, that somehow, by some means, in some way, we're stopping our lives and starting this life, and when we finish this life, we go back to the other life. The fact is, our whole lives, all day long and all week long, all month long, all year long, all lifetime long, should be imbued with a spiritual fabric, so much so that everything we do is touched and tainted by our spiritual values, our spiritual focus on what really matters. This kind of thinking goes a long way in changing our lives in wonderful ways. The things you're arguing about, what do they matter in the light of eternity? Those things you're most worried about, you can't go to sleep because you're just caught up with anxiety over them. What do these things mean in the context of eternity? So much of the difficulties of life just fade and float away the more everything is covered by a spiritual mindset that sees the eternal as most important, as the spirit and soul much more so important than the body and the flesh. That mindset goes a long way. And a moment ago we looked at 2 Corinthians 4, but let's broaden that context just a bit, because Paul starts by talking about the physical ailments and difficulties and persecutions he's gone through. And he says that this decaying of, this destroying of the body, and he's talking there about his physical ailments. He's got, among other things, a thorn in the flesh he references in the last part of 2 Corinthians. And he has the difficulties of his persecution, the stoning, the scourging, the shipwreck, all of that. The outward man is perishing, he says. It's being destroyed. But he says the inward man is being renewed day by day. For this light affliction, which is but for a moment, works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look, and here's a passage we looked at a while ago, while we look not at things which are seen, but at things which are not seen. For things which are seen are temporal, things which are not seen are eternal. And just a few verses later in chapter 5 and 7, you'll say we walk by faith. and not by sight. That faith is the spiritual trust in God, a faith in the Lord, which completely colors everything else in our lives. So much so that you're not leaving the one going to the other. It's all just the one. Now that's the what of it. But how do you get there? How do you get to a mindset like that? Well, just as the passage we read suggests. Have you eaten today? Have you had anything to drink today since you got up this morning? And I don't know all of your schedules. I'm not that kind of a preacher looking into your every moment of life. But I think I can stand here and say with great certainty that every one of us has had something to eat and something to drink since we got up from bed this morning. Why? Well, because I was thirsty, so I took a drink. I was hungry, so I had a little bite to eat. The animal kingdom lives that way all the time. That's the way the body works. You know that an animal is sick when the animal loses its hunger. You know, we as humans have a problem if we're never hungry. There's something wrong there. We need to be hungry. What we must develop is a spiritual, holy hunger for the things of God. For just as the deer longs for the water in the brook, just as we long for the next meal, the next bite, the next drink, we have that same hunger for the spiritual mindset, a closeness with the Lord, a fullness of our spiritual lives. We have a hunger for it. And in the absence of that, all Christianity is a contract where we do this and God gives us this. We check these boxes and God pays us back in these ways. Not any kind of way the Bible talks about. The Bible never says that. But that's what we're left with. In the lack of this desire, this deep hunger for the things of God, all we're left with is obligation and responsibility and doing what God says do because he said do it, and after all, he's God and we're not. If that's all our religion is, we've so missed the point of what all of this is meant to be about. Let's sing a song together. It's number 71. I think we all know it. And it comes directly from this passage we've referenced in Psalm 42.
As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you. You alone are my strength, my shield.
So many of the Psalms describe this same hunger, thirst, desire, a yearning for the things of God, especially the Psalms written by David. That Psalm known of all of them would have to be the 23rd, where David talks about even considering death itself, the valley of the shadow. He says, I'll fear no evil, for you're with me. He ends that wonderful shepherd psalm by saying, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And David talks a lot about things like that. My refuge, my strength, very present help in trouble. Be still and know that God is God. Have you noticed that in the psalm, a number of them, a good percentage, are written by David. But how many psalms are written by, now think about this, it may take you a second. How many of the psalms are written by King Saul? And I'll let you ponder that for just a moment. Count them up on, well, you can have no fingers on both hands and still get the right answer. He didn't write a one of them. Why? The very thing we're talking about. What's the difference in Saul and David? Well, David, well, he was, okay, it wasn't that. Well, it was, no, it wasn't that. What was it? Well, we mentioned a while ago that if you lack the idea of a true thirst and hunger for relationship with the Father, with his son, Jesus Christ, you're left with nothing but a contract. That's the kind of relationship Saul seemed to have with the Lord, a contractual one where he didn't keep up with his contract, but he saw it basically, I do this, you'll do the other. You do this, and I'll do the other. A tit for that, this for that, quid pro quo. David didn't look at his relationship with God that way. He saw it as a personal thing. And yes, he in some ways can be said to have sinned more severely than Saul did. Why was he a man after God's own heart? Because he came back from it, yes. He repented of his sin, absolutely. But also, he always had this relationship with the Lord, born of a desire to be with him, to be right with him, to be close to him. He had this hunger and thirst for the things of God. And that's why he could write with inspired language, but also with a heart of one who loves the Lord, so many of the psalms we've attributed to him. And why I can't imagine what a psalm would even look like if Saul had written it. Which may speak to us when it comes to you and to me. Whether you're a poet or not, are you more inclined to be one who could speak of the lofty love you have for the Lord and his relationship with you and you with him, or do you see religion more as a contract? I've done this, so I'll get this. I've checked these boxes, and so I get this as a reward. I'll just tell you, on a very personal level, one way will bring misery and frustration. One way will give you peace. True peace. That, as Paul says, passes all understanding. One more song we'll sing together, 837. I think this song speaks right to the very idea we're talking about this evening. And I most especially like about this song the common language in every verse which suggests our need every hour, not just sometimes. We all need the Lord at difficult times. When illness comes, when uncertainty is there, when we don't know what's around the next corner, when we're afraid of what might happen next, when we have difficulties in life, But no, we really need the Lord every hour, good times and bad. Times when we can seemingly see what's happening next, and sometimes when we can't, when really we never can. We always need the Lord. Let's sing together, 837.
I need thee every hour.
First thing I do before I even pour the first cup of coffee is I feed the cats. Why? Because they're in there at the dish meowing, and they don't stop until they get fed. They're cats. Dogs are the same way. They tend to know when the bowl is empty, and they tend to know when they're hungry. And they are incessant in their pleas, their barks, their meows. They're letting you know they need to be fed. Well, that's what the passage this evening talked about. The deer, even the wild animals, they thirst. They get hungry. The whole point is we should have that same desire every day, every hour, for closeness with the Lord, and changing and coloring our whole way of looking at life that way. And you'll find the more you do it, the more hunger you'll have. The more you try it, the more thirsty you'll become. You might say, well, I haven't got much desire in this area. That's because you've never tasted the good things of God's grace and His love and His teaching. The more you drink of that well, the more you want more. The more you eat of God's good meat, of His teachings and His will, the more you want more of it. And you want to reach the point all of us do where we have this constant yearning, this constant longing, this constant hunger for the things of God. Because when all is said and done, as life has come to an end, that's all that'll matter, the things of God. If you're here tonight and you're subject to the Lord's invitation, don't put it off, but come now, as together we stand and sing.